Governor Janet Mills. Last Friday, Governor Janet Mills unveiled her first biennial budget plan, and last night, before a joint session of the legislature, gave a speech defending it. In that speech, Mills laid out her priorities, including a focus on the state's opioid epidemic, expansion of Maine care, education, infrastructure, and green energy. She says the budget is sustainable and will not raise taxes. But already, some are critical of it, questioning her revenue projections and spending increases. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Governor Mills joins us today to discuss her budget proposal and her priorities. What are your questions for the new governor of Maine? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Governor Janet Mills was sworn in as Maine's 75th governor just over a month ago. She gave her first budget address last night, and she joins me today. Governor Mills, thanks for joining us on Maine Calling.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's good to see you.
As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about the governor's budget priorities, her cabinet appointments, her decision to expand Medicaid? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page, and a programming note. Immediately after today's Maine Calling program, Maine Public will broadcast the governor's budget address in its entirety on the radio. So that's right at 2 o'clock after this program. Governor Mills, welcome back to Maine Calling. Although you've been on the program several times, this is the first time as governor.
Thank you.
From your perspective, is the job so far what you thought it would be?
I'm having a lot of fun. I actually, the first task was putting together a government, putting together a cabinet, and we've had 14 out of the 15 cabinet members confirmed, sworn in, qualified, and working their tails off. And of course, at the same time, we're doing a budget, and I was really privileged to have some people volunteer in that respect. We had not only Kirsten Figueroa, the new Department of Administrative Financial Services Commissioner, working on this budget, but also Ryan Lowe, who used to be the budget officer and used to be commissioner and now works for the university, and Jeremy Fisher, former chair of the Appropriations Committee, and Peggy Rotundo and others, really helping go over the backlog of requests from the various departments to determine which ones have the most merit. And looking at the revenue forecast, which is put together by an objective, independent team of economists who meet twice a year and put together the revenue forecasting forecast for the next couple of years. And we based it all on that.
Yeah, well, that was one of my big questions for you. I know that there is, as you put it, a backlog of requests, a lot of different constituents coming to you, expecting something from you. How did you choose your priorities in putting together this budget?
Well, thanks for the question. What I heard on the campaign trail were several things. One is people were demanding better health care and lower health insurance rates. Big issue for business and for individuals across the state of Maine. Secondly, I heard a lot about education. People want to have more state support for K through 12 education. People want more emphasis on early childhood education, including Head Start and pre-K and CDS, the Child Development Services, because we all know that one thing that contributes to, for instance, the opioid epidemic and inability to finish school are things like adverse childhood experiences. The way we address those things early on is to have appropriate and informed child care and Head Start services and pre-K available, not mandated, but optional for four-year-olds to be able to socialize, and even on a half-day basis, be able to have some instructional benefits. And CDS, of course, kicks in at infancy and for young kids who need special services. So we want to support all those needs.
So really using the information you learned from the campaign trail informed your priorities.
Sure, and the opioid epidemic is something I had been dealing with for 6 years in particular as Attorney General, I mean, it impacted every aspect of our work as Attorney General. It impacted licensing, regulatory issues, the medical examiner's office, the criminal division, natural resources when it comes to disposal of drugs and whatnot, the healthcare crimes unit. So we've been looking at that, even child protection and child support matters, people not being able to pay child support because they're spending the money on drugs, and keeping tabs on the overdose death statistics from 1 year to the next. We know from Attorney General Fry's release earlier this week, 282 people died in the first 9 months of last year from drug overdose. That is exactly one a day, basically. So it's an ongoing epidemic that we've got to address.
All right. Well, this budget depends on strong revenue, a strong economy. It's 11% increase over the last budget, and the Republicans are already questioning its sustainability. I'm sure you've already heard it over and over again. What do you say to them?
Well, I'm happy to carry on a long dialogue with them over the next few months. As I pointed out in the budget address last night, this budget is sustainable. The budget estimates, the figures, are based on the Revenue Forecasting Commission. Now, I didn't appoint them. They weren't appointed by me. They're a part and parcel of the prior administration. They're experts in their area, you know, including the state economist and nonpartisan individuals. They put together a revenue forecast that anticipates in the out years, never mind this coming biennium, but the following biennium, they predict forecast $8.3 billion in revenues to be available, just general fund revenues. So this budget is much less than that. And it takes into account no new taxes. There are no gimmicks. There are no negative balances. We're not playing around with moving things from 1 year to the next, as sometimes happens. And we're preserving the $270-odd million stabilization fund. We're not touching that. We propose not to touch that because I think it is important.
When you say the stabilization fund, what most people call the
rainy day fund. Yeah. You know, like most people in their own budgets, you try to have savings available in case of a downturn, in case of something untoward happening. In this case, I feel pretty confident about Maine's economic future. And the housing starts have been pretty stable in the last couple of years. Construction sales are stable. Revenue from sales taxes, especially during the height of tourist season, are very good. Income taxes and corporate taxes are good. Some of that depends on how the new federal tax law plays out. But and the Federal Reserve has promised not to increase interest rates again this year. If they do so the next year, that could cause some problems in terms of bonding and in terms of homeowners and mortgage rates and that kind of thing. So we're keeping money in reserve in case of a downturn, however slight, and I think that's an appropriate thing to do.
Your predecessor, Governor LePage, said yesterday that you spend money like a drunken sailor. Would you care to respond?
No.
The budget, as you know, because you were a legislator, it will has to go through a process now, and you know it'll change. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if there are any items, any priorities in your budget that you view as non-negotiable. Is there something that if it's not there, if the budget doesn't have this, you're going to veto it?
No, we're not at that stage yet. I'll tell you, the priorities that I outlined last night will remain pretty much the same. More funding for education from the state. We put $126 million on the table here for additional state funds for K-12 through the Essential Programs and Services formula. That's a lot of additional funds for the state share for education. That alone would bring us up to almost 51% state funding for education through the formula statewide. The other thing is the opioid epidemic. And this doesn't take that much money. It takes a concentration, it takes a focus, and it takes prioritization. Right now, without any additional general fund, any additional taxpayer dollars, we've identified several million dollars in funds that are currently sitting at the Department of Health and Human Services, federal money that has not been allocated and that should be and will be allocated to purchasing Narcan, for instance, and hiring recovery coaches and going into the schools and starting new prevention and education programs and figuring out what works and what perhaps doesn't work and engaging the communities because it's got to be an all-out community effort if we were to seriously address this epidemic.
What is the timeline on that? The federal funds that you talked about last night in your budget address that you would like Maine to be able to draw down, I'm sure there are deadlines for those and a process. Are these funds that we will see soon, or is this something we're going to be looking at in 2020?
All of the above. Some of the funds that have been turned away in the past about, Forest Legacy Program money, several hundred thousand dollars for Alzheimer's identification and treatment, diagnosis, several hundred thousand dollars for colorectal cancer screening tests with no state match in many of these cases, money for childhood hunger and childhood diseases. That's money that is owed us, that our people in Maine paid federal taxes. And that money, instead of coming back to Maine, is going to other states instead. So why would we turn it away? They all have different time frames, and I'll be working closely with the congressional delegation, be meeting with them week after next, or the end of next week, I guess, to determine what we can do, how we can better draw down federal funds. For instance, broadband, Connect America funds will be available. I want to make sure Maine gets its fair share of that because we have some of the highest needs for expanding broadband. We have a dispersed population. We have those funky peninsulas. Very hard to lay fiber along those lines. So we want federal money for that, federal money for other health care needs, anti-terrorism needs, public safety, and roads. I signed one document a couple weeks ago that had not been signed previously, to draw down $13 million in federal funds for roads.
Is there anything now that you're in the Blaine House and sitting in the governor's office that you didn't expect to come over your desk that has? Is there any priority that's something that's maybe not being talked about in the headlines, but in your view will emerge as a major issue in Maine?
That's a pretty tough question. I can't think of it. Nothing jumps off the page right now.
I'm thinking the view is a little different now.
The view is different. I think when you put on the mantle of the governorship, it's a whole different ballgame than assuming the position of attorney general or any other executive or public position. It's a whole different thing. I went to a funeral recently of a very prominent individual, very caring and influential person. And I got to say to the family, it's not just me, Janet Mills, expressing sympathy. I express sympathy and condolences on behalf of the 1.3 million people in the state of Maine whom he served in various capacities. And it's a whole different thing to represent the people of the state of Maine, not just yourself or an agency or a particular part of government. You're representing the people.
I'd like to discuss a couple of issues that are in the news right now. And there's a lawsuit going on against Aroostook County and particularly the prison about medication-assisted treatment, right? There, MAT. I know that you have issued guidance to Maine state prison system about medication-assisted treatment, encouraging the prisons, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but encouraging the warden and prisons to look into incorporating this for people who come to prison with addictions. What is your point of view of what the county jails need to be doing at this point? Again, you don't have jurisdiction, but have been attorney general and district attorney.
Yeah, and I don't want to comment on any pending lawsuits or any litigation. I know the Penobscot County Jail has made available something called Vivitrol, which is a 30-day effective Suboxone-type medication, and with aftercare. And I'll credit my predecessor for helping out with that, for providing the funds for the Penobscot County Jail to start out a medication-assisted release program. I've talked to the governor of Rhode Island, Gina Raimondo, my commissioner of corrections, Randy Liberty, and the commissioner of HHS and the commissioner of public safety, Michael Soshak, have all been talking to Rhode Island and seeing how we can duplicate what they have done in their county jails, in their jails, rather. They have what appears to be a very effective release program. if someone is in jail and has a substance use disorder, which approximately 75% of inmates statewide, nationwide have, then they can be, upon their release date, before, given medication-assisted treatment, Suboxone and the like, and released with that program and with wraparound services. Here's some help getting a job. Here's some help getting housing in some place where you might not have to, might not fall back in with a crowd you were in before, that kind of thing. And they've reduced the recidivism rate to a large extent, and they've reduced the relapse rate of those with substance use disorder. We have drug courts, 5 and going on 6 now, and they're pretty effective that way too. But we want to get the people who are incarcerated and make sure that we help them recover too. It's a boon to society as a whole and a boon to them as well.
One of the hottest issues right now in Western Maine, CMP and Hydro-Québec are working on a new deal they say will offer at least $250 million in new value to Maine, including reduced electricity rates for all Maine ratepayers and help for low-income residents. Can you support the project if it provides these benefits?
Looking at the details, I think they have not yet been ironed out. In general, what I have said, and I continue to say, is that I want to see substantial environmental mitigation. I want to see help for the sportsmen and women who are seeing a lessening of the wintering areas and things of that sort. I want to see help for ratepayers, and I want to see efforts towards solar, increasing access and availability of solar, community and residential solar. I want to see access to broadband, and all those things are on the table. And so I'm happy with the progress that is being made. I'm anxious to see the details.
So what you've seen before doesn't satisfy that yet?
Well, I haven't seen the precise details. I like the progress that they're making, and I like the subject areas they're addressing. Electric vehicles, for instance, and electric vehicle charging stations all over Maine, I can see that happening, and I appreciate and welcome their help in that regard.
All right. I know that you have announced you'd like to have a new cabinet-level position for energy. Do you know who that person is? Do you want to make some news on Maine Calling today?
I'm sorry. I regret that I can't. I can't yet do that. Sorry. We're looking at a lot
on.
Of people. No. Sorry.
Oh, and Governor Mills
just got the budget done.
That's true. You have had something on your plate. Before we go to a break, I want to ask you about this budget process. Are you hoping that the legislature can pass this by April?
I am hoping to pass. I'm hoping they pass and I get to sign a 2/3 budget on or before June 30th.
And when you say 2/3 budget, you want this to be a bipartisan budget.
I definitely want this to be a bipartisan budget.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. We're speaking with Governor Janet Mills. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
Psychologists who study school shooters say they often have a lot in common.
People that do these kinds of targeted attacks don't feel very good about themselves. They don't feel very good about their accomplishments. They don't feel good about their social sets or where they're headed in their life.
How that despair can transform into anger and a desire to hurt others. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered is coming up today at 4 here on Maine Public Radio. You've heard the tones before here on Maine Public Radio and perhaps also on Maine Public Television. Maine Public is the designated primary source for the entire state of Maine emergency alert system, which we transmit to all other stations for broadcast to all listeners and viewers all around the state. This is a valuable and important public service tool to help inform, alert, and warn citizens when situations warrant. And Maine Public's statewide infrastructure enables it to fulfill this vital task and public service.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Governor Janet Mills is with me in our Augusta studio. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And a reminder that immediately following today's program, Maine Public Radio will be broadcasting last night's budget address by Governor Mills. We're going to start in Orrington, and this is Harold. Hi, Harold. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling with the governor.
Yeah, hello, Governor Mills.
Hi, Harold.
I'm impressed with what you've been saying, but I just want to see what your thoughts are regarding the issues of older Mainers, including the things like drug costs or drug information, their food insecurity, or even information or getting things out regarding better qualities and diet, and in general, what your thoughts are and concerns are.
Well, thanks for the question, Harold. A couple things in the budget that you might be interested in are the fact that we're supplanting we're putting more funds behind the Drug for Maine's Elderly program, Drugs for Maine's Elderly, and the Medicare Savings Plan, which have been kind of depleted in the last 10 years. And when I was on the Appropriations Committee for 4 years, we worked on that quite assiduously. And we want to replenish those funds to help Maine seniors who don't qualify for any of the specific Medicare benefits, drug benefits plans, to help them with their drug costs. I think it's appalling how drug companies around the world are increasing their prices, and but especially for Americans. You know, we help subsidize the research, and then we see them spend billions each year advertising on TV. And quite frankly, I'm most particularly annoyed with the Sackler family and those who distributed and marketed opioids for the wrong reasons and with the wrong marketing and got people basically hooked on these drugs. But in addition, the price increases. I've been working with Senator Vitelli for a couple of years on a drug price transparency bill, and we're going to continue to work on that too.
All right, Harold, thank you so much for your call. We have a tweet from Lance. In addition to the much-needed tobacco prevention control funding increase, including in the proposed budget, what other measures does the governor support to address the youth e-cigarette epidemic?
Ooh, youth e-cigs. Now, let's be clear. These are products that are not clean. They're not clear of nicotine. They actually contain nicotine. Some of the statistics we've seen recently show that about 20% of all seniors in high school have regularly smoked or inhaled e-cigs and engaged in what's called vaping. This is more than annoying. It's troublesome because the nicotine in those products, the producers, who many of them are owned by tobacco companies, the intent of getting kids hooked on these apparatus is to get them hooked on nicotine and ultimately stay hooked on nicotine, take up cigarettes, cigars, and cigarillos. And we know that we know the devastating health consequences to that. So public education, cessation products for those who are already hooked on nicotine. We have a very high rate of tobacco use in Maine, and we haven't addressed it successfully. When the Fund for Healthy Maine was invented about 20 years ago, we developed purposes for that money. We're going to go back to some of the original purposes for that money and include tobacco cessation and nicotine prevention and cessation in those funds.
We'll go to Charlie, who's calling from Damariscotta. Hi, Charlie. Go ahead.
Governor,
Charlie, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Can now. Hello. Hi, Charlie.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Governor, I'm calling about mentally ill people who unfortunately sometimes become violent. And in Maine and across the country, they're housed in our jails and prisons and not getting treatment. And I think we pretty much know that mentally ill people will not be violent if properly treated. And my specific question is, would you take the money that LePage set aside for a new forensic psychiatric facility and put it back into treatment centers where people can be taken by the police instead of to an ER or to jail?
Wow, Charlie, thanks for the question. That's an interesting concept. And I know there's some legislation pending to set up crisis centers around the state, and I haven't seen the details. I think the idea is good, but, you know, then again, you've got civil liberties interests at stake here. How do you keep somebody behind bars, whether it's a crisis stabilization unit or jail, without proper due process. We don't want to go back to the days of institutionalization of people simply because of their mental illness. But I agree with you that a high proportion of people in the prisons and jails right now have some form of mental illness and has gone untreated. So I would like to see more services in the jails and in the correctional facilities of the state. Whether we take that money from the step-down facility is an open question. I think that we're looking at the details of the step-down facility right now, because we also have a high need to address the forensic patients in Riverview, and some of whom are being housed at Dorothea Dix now. It's a separate problem, but equally serious, and I want to make sure we do the right thing by them and by their families, and make sure that they are successfully treated so they can reenter society at an appropriate time.
Charlie, thanks for your question. We'll move on to Steve, who's calling from Old Town. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, Governor, I just wanted to say, well, it's an honor to be on with you. And also, I appreciate that you chose to run. It's obvious to me when I was considering to vote for you that you've been practicing for this position all your life. And I just, you know, I love to hear you and your sister laugh. Let me tell you that, too. So it's great to have someone in the Blaine House who is bringing what I call the Mainer back, the concept that, you know, we can have fun and we also can respect each other, that we also are some of the most passionate people about what we do and where we live. And I think one of the tool set, one of the tools in your kit is that you have the ability as a leader to, you know, to bring that to people, to understand that you love this state, that you really care about them and what's going to happen to us or what we can do together. So I greatly appreciate it. And thank you.
Thanks,
and,
Steve.
I made a great choice in my vote. I will say, pat myself on the back.
Oh.
The only
thank
thing,
you for voting.
Only, you're welcome. The only other
thing a question. Uh-oh.
I hope you do a beer, a beer, because the beer industry in Maine has really exploded. I hope you do a statewide every once in a while. Just so I would just love to hear you laugh. It is so.
So you'd like the governor to hit every craft brewery in Maine?
I can
think
laugh
there are more than 100 now.
I can laugh without having a beer.
Well, Steve, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Steve.
We'll move on to Lee calling from Brunswick. Hi, Lee. Go ahead.
Hi there. I want to say how proud I am to finally have a woman in this leadership position in our state. And I think you've done some great things right off the bat. Your appointment to selection for the head of DECF, I think, is awesome. It will be so great if Amanda can be in that position. And I also, as I understand it, you're going to be supporting the Office of Outdoor Recreation, which I think will do so many wonderful things for our state. So thank you for all of that. One thing that I was disappointed in thus far is your selection of Jerry Reed. And I wondered if you would speak to why you thought that he was the best person for that position, even though you knew that the tribes likely would not support him.
Well, thank you for the question. I think the issues about the tribes were pretty well aired during his committee hearing. And some of it was, you know, I think we had to disabuse some misinformation at that point, too. He was misquoted in a federal court hearing, and he set the record straight there. He's had a good relationship with a lot of people, and it's significant to me that most of the environmental community came out and supported him, and many of the businesses approved of him, and the committee supported him. I think it was unanimous. I think it was it was 11 to 0, right? So he's a real genuine guy. He's very thoughtful, he's very intelligent, and he knows environmental law and regulation. And that's an extremely important position. I wanted somebody with good common sense and judgment and preferably legal background, which he has, and you know, knowledge of the environmental laws and regulations, federal and state. You know, he's taken on the federal government. He's been part of the lawsuits against the federal government when they try to roll back the mercury and airborne toxics rule, for instance, and that's a lot of what's poisoning our waterways in Maine. And we need to join the tribes in those kinds of fights, and we are doing that.
All right. Lee, thanks for your question. And there are several related questions just about the relationship with the tribes in the state. What do you foresee as what's your game plan for trying to improve relations?
Well, thanks. A lot depends on the different tribes, the individual tribes. There are four different ones, as you know, and one with two different reservations. And I think their needs are all different. And I don't pretend to tell them what they want or what they should expect from state government. But we have the dialogue going. We have that conversation going. A conversation that I was not allowed to really did not have an opportunity to engage in as Attorney General because we were on the other side of some litigation, and they have legal counsel, the Penobscots do anyway. So, but we did assist the Passamaquoddy tribe in some respects, and now opening up the dialogue is important. I have much broader authority and jurisdiction and ability to an opportunity to talk with the tribes about various issues as we go along. And I was pleased to choose Donna Loring as our liaison with the tribes. And she's going to do a lot of traveling around the state, meeting with different tribal councils and finding out where they're at on different issues. We have a lot to work together on. The opioid epidemic alone, it's distressing to hear that in one reservation alone, there were two opioid overdose deaths in just a matter of weeks recently. We want to work together on those kinds of issues.
All right. Well, we'll move on to Alberto calling from Carroll Plantation. Hi, Alberto. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for having me on your show. Nice to hear your voices. My question, because I go to one of the local technical schools in the area.
Mm-hmm.
My question was,
Alberto, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm right here. How come we don't have school resource officers at every single high school?
All right. Alberto, were you able to hear that Governor Mills wants to have school resource officers in the schools?
I like the idea of school resource officers. A lot depends on the local school district and the local police departments and the county sheriff's offices to see, how they can afford to have a part-time or full-time school resource officer. In some cities, they have them in the lower grades and middle schools and high schools, but I think that's pretty rare. Mostly they're in the high schools, and I think they're most effective in the middle schools and high schools. But we want to develop better community relationships between the police departments and the schools and make sure we have an open dialogue between students and police officers in every community. Funding that is a whole different ball game, and the governor is not really in a position to say we're going to fund a school resource person in every school. There's just too many schools and too many police departments who are strapped for cash. We are authorizing the hiring of about 15 additional troopers and sergeants for the Maine State Police so that they're going to be available, especially in the rural areas, have a 24-hour presence just for the regular duties of law enforcement. That in itself is challenging. So,
all right, Alberto, thanks for your call. Mary on Facebook asks, with our aging population, do you have any ideas on how to not only keep young people in the state, but entice other young people to move here? Can we get rid of the idea that Maine is just a vacation land, but is a place people will want to move to and stay?
Great idea. And I heard a lot about that on the campaign trail last year, and I've been talking a lot about that exact same thing. I feel like the office of the governor is a couple things. One is you're a manager, you're an administrator, you're running a budget, you're trying to support things. And a budget is sometimes a statement of values. And in this budget, we do put money behind the university system and the community colleges and Maine Maritime Academy. We do put some money behind broadband. And our new DECD commissioner, Heather Johnson, is remarkably adept at identifying federal monies and managing state monies so as to market the whole state of Maine, not just as a tourism destination, but as a place where families could come and live, work, and play and work remotely or start a new business. And that's our game plan. I just want to be the biggest cheerleader for the state of Maine. And I want to tell the world what a great place we are, what great people we have, what a great work ethic, and what incredible, unmatched natural resources. I think people will come here.
David on Facebook says, you have spoken of climate change as a priority. So I'm wondering what initiatives you are creating to address it, especially the erosion of our beaches and threats to the shoreline.
Oh, wow. That's a big, broad issue, David. Thank you for the question. You know, some years ago, the legislature did a study, authorized a study on ocean acidification. And we've been talking a lot about the rising seas, but we've done nothing about it. And I think one of the items we've got to look at is community resilience and increasing the resiliency of our coastal communities. I know there are legislators like Representative Lydia Bloom and others who are very, very intent on taking action in that regard. We're going to be putting together a climate change and energy cabinet to look at a myriad of issues. We know that the Gulf of Maine is changing a great deal, that the lobster population has shifted, that the cod fisheries have depleted, that the herring fisheries is closed down, essentially closed down, and that we're looking at new ways of farming oysters and scallops. We're looking at diversifying our aquaculture and our agricultural interests. But climate change is a big factor all around. And what I've decided is, look, I want every single department of state government to be looking at climate change. Department of Education, Department of Transportation, Health and Human Services, all of them. But the oceans issue is a real big one, obviously, for a lot of reasons, and erosion is a major one. Our DEP commissioner, Jerry Reed, will also be looking at that, too.
All right. Well, we are going to take another quick break. We're speaking with Governor Janet Mills. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Houston and Company, celebrating 30 years of fine furniture making. Showroom and workshop in Kennebunkport and online at houstonandcompany.com. This spring and summer, Maine Public News will be on the road, stopping in communities all around the state to talk to you about the important issues in your community and what topics are most important for us to report on. More on that as we get closer, but right now, as a lead-up to the tour, we have a statewide survey we'd like you to fill out. It only takes a few minutes. Visit mainepublic.org and click on Events and the Tell Me More survey. Or if you aren't online, call Audience Services, 1-800-884-1717, and we'll get one right out to you. Thanks. Your participation will ensure Maine Public News serves you better in the months ahead. Maine Public Television consists of four unique channels these days, our Maine HD channel, and also Create, World, and PBS Kids, all of which are offered free and over the air. PBS Kids offers 24/7 commercial-free educational children's programming you can trust whenever you want. And that's not all. Wherever you want as well. We also offer PBS Kids for online streaming on your mobile devices. To find out more, visit mainepublic.org and click on Television or see your Experience member magazine. PBS Kids is a digital channel and, similar to World and Create, can be seen over the air and on most cable channels in our state. Enjoy!
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, your questions for Governor Janet Mills. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. A programming note, immediately following today's program at 2 o'clock, we will broadcast the governor's budget address in its entirety on the radio.
Broadcast that first and then let people call and ask questions. So reverse order here.
We already have enough questions.
Okay.
Is the thing. Riley on Facebook says, I was once fresh from the Army and moved to Maine. I worked at the distribution center for Shaw's and as a cable guy in Wells. I made more money washing dishes when I moved to Seattle. The minimum wage is too low, and that is why young people can't live in Maine. They risk spinning their wheels, never getting to a point where a millennial like me can buy a home.
Wow. I'm sorry you had that experience, Riley. I think that there have been efforts in the last few years in particular to increase the minimum wage. They've been successful. It is going up every year. And then there's an indexing that kicks in after next year. But I think equally important is what you take home from your paycheck. And that means cost of living and benefits packages, that is health insurance and leave policies, things of that sort that are very important to employees and employers. And one of my goals is to help small businesses find adequate and affordable health insurance for their employees. Because if you're taking home, $30,000, $40,000 a year, but you're paying you know, $6,000 a year for health insurance, that takes a big chunk of change out of your pocket and out of things you could be spending money on, you know, for to buy a car, to put money into a home or hire a rent apartment, that kind of thing. So we want to look at both ends of the spectrum. The wage is one thing, the benefits is another, and they're equally important.
We'll go to Dick, who's calling from Brooksville. Hi, Dick. Go ahead.
Hi there, Governor. Congratulations on getting a budget together. I haven't heard talk about land for Maine's future and development of the state parks, and wondering what you've got in the budget for those two items. Thank you.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you, Dick. Land for Maine's future generally comes under bond issues, and we've reserved money for interest payments in the budget for the biennial coming up for payment towards a bond that would include Land for Maine's future. We did not propose a specific amount, but clearly that's a priority. I think when the people are given the opportunity to vote on Land for Maine's future bonds, they overwhelmingly accept them and vote them in. So I think that's an important indicator of the public support for Land for Maine's future. And yes, they will be meeting. Yes, I will encourage my commissioners to take part in those meetings, take part. And I'm particularly interested in waterfront access, too. That's one of the things that the Land for Maine's future can allot money towards. And it ties in with a previous question about coastal communities, too.
Dick, thanks for your call. Ed asks on Facebook, restoring river herring passage on Maine's rivers, most now are dammed. There has been a crash in cod and Atlantic herring stocks. River herring passage can help bring back Atlantic salmon and cod. Could you please help make sure that fish and eel passage will be improved on the Union River and on all Maine rivers?
Okay, that sounds like a Pat Kelleher question to me. I'm a fisherman. I like fly fishing for brookies and stuff, but I'm not up to date on the river herring issue and the Union River in particular, so I can't really comment, but I love the question, and I'll ask Pat Kelleher what he thinks about that, Commissioner of Marine Resources, because I think that's in his jurisdiction, although these are andronous.
Now you're going to say Andronymous. I can't say right either. Thanks a lot. Okay, we're going to go to Edward calling from North Berwick. Hi, Edward. You're on Maine Calling with Governor Mills.
Hi. Congratulations on your election, Janet Mills.
Thank you, Edward.
I just had a question about voters and their trust. There was a lot of LePage did a lot of bad things for voters' trust. The Citizens Initiative. I know you voted Medicaid in right away when you got in, but how else will you help to restore voters' trust?
Well, it's a big question, and I guess I have to earn it. I have to earn it every day. I don't take anything for granted in this job. I hope that the voters will know that I have an open door. I want to hear from people. I'll be going out to the communities in the next few weeks and months and listen to people around the state, whether it's Eastport or Dover Foxcroft, Machias, Sanford, et cetera, all over the state, because I want to talk to people on the ground. I don't want to have my information about what Maine people think distilled through lobbyists and experts and staff people. I want to hear directly from the people. That's one thing I can do. I'm trying to pay attention to that.
All right, Edward, thanks for your question. We'll go to Dan, who's calling from Gorham, New Hampshire. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Hey, congratulations, Governor, on running a fine race. As an ex-Mainer and political junkie, I think you did a great job.
Thanks, Dan. Hope you can come back sometime soon.
Well, I don't see that happening. It's tough. You know, 5 years ago, my state senator challenged the people in the audience, if they liked it in the Granite State, they should go live over there. And unfortunately, I took the plunge. And this week in New Hampshire Business Magazine, that basically states that Maine spends twice what New Hampshire does on tourist marketing. And I'm just kind of curious how, when we have so many talented ad agencies in Maine, Maine has been sending tens of millions of dollars to Wisconsin to promote Maine. The people in Wisconsin don't know Maine. As a political and economic refugee from Franklin County, I'm please asking you to look into the Maine tourism that money can be better spent to help small family-owned businesses in, like, Oxford County and Franklin County and Gatticoot County.
Thank you, Dan. I'll be happy to look at that. Now that we have a commissioner on board, as of, you know, last week, she's anxious to look at everything the department is doing, too. And, you know, somebody mentioned earlier the outdoor recreation position, which is in DECD right now, Economic Community Development. And I love what Carol Ann Ouellette is doing there. I want her and that department to work more closely with IF&W, the fish and wildlife people, and with agriculture, conservation, and forestry people, because I think, you know, we want to break down those silos, make sure that we market Maine appropriately. You know, the hunting population is diminished somewhat in the last few years, too. We want to make sure that people know that Maine is an excellent place to come to hunt and to fish, to hike, to enjoy the great outdoors. I go to public parks in Rangeley and Greenville and all over the state of Maine, and you see people, you know, people don't know that those parks are there. I agree we should be marketing Maine much more effectively.
All right, Dan, thank you so much for your call. We're going to move up to Bangor and Dixie. Hi, Dixie. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I'm very hopeful that with Governor Mills being elected, and one of the things that I'm interested in is what the policies will be for people who are autistic or have intellectual disability. I have a son who's 25 years old and has really struggled with the level of availability of services for what his need is.
Oh, thank you, Dixie. Boy, the increase in autism is astounding. And we don't really know why that's happening, but I can tell you that it's personal to me because I have a grandchild who has autism, and he's aging out of the school system now. We know that the Section 21 and Section 29 waivers have had wait lists, and we're addressing that in the budget. And Commissioner Jean Lambrou is addressing that as best she can as well. And it's a sticky problem for a lot of families all across the state of Maine. And dealing with it in the schools, too. It's not just HHS. It's the Department of Education and local school districts having to deal with different levels of autism. As you know, it's not one set disease. There's a spectrum. And different children, different adults have different needs. So accommodating all those different needs. But it's our responsibility as a government with public trust to address those needs and to make sure all our kids are taken care of and all of our adults with those issues. I don't know if your child is in, your son is in a work setting or living in or going to dayhab or living in a residential facility, but these are all challenges we're going to be looking at.
All right, Dixie, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Gardner and Becky. Hi, Becky. Go ahead. Becky, go ahead. Are you there?
Hi, Becky.
Shoot. We'll move on. We'll go to Emery, who's calling from Hollowell. Hi, Emery. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Governor. Can you hear me?
Yes, thanks for taking
my call, and we're really happy to have you. I'm an ER physician. I practice here in Augusta, and I'm doing a fellowship in obesity medicine. And I would tell you that about 90% of what I see in the ER is 100% preventable through lifestyle changes. And a lot of our chronic disease is due to obesity. And by 2020, 90% of the U.S. adult population will be overweight or obese. And it really starts in childhood, and I'm wondering if there's anybody doing anything for getting processed food out of schools, because we're seeing the childhood obesity rate is now 1 out of 5 children. So we've got kids who are going to have heart attacks by the time they're in their 30s. And I just don't see really a push, and I appreciate all your work on the opiate epidemic, but I see this as a much worse problem. So I'm just wondering if there's thoughts on childhood nutrition in schools.
Gosh, great question. My sister's been involved in this. My sister Dora Mills used to be head of the CDC. And in more recent years, she developed a program for SNAP recipients. I can't remember what it's called, but to educate families who are getting food assistance about the best foods and how to cook them, basic education. In terms of the school lunch program, I know that the federal government had some kind of threshold, some kind of measures of you know, low-fat foods, calorie-sensitive meals, things of that sort. And I read in the paper just a couple of weeks ago that they were thinking of paring that back and allowing more junk food in schools. I don't like that. I don't think we should be encouraging kids to eat junk foods. and sodas that, you know, are replacement calories and don't do you any good. So I agree with your priority. I agree that obesity is a major problem. I'll be thinking about that in the coming weeks and see if we can do something more about it at the state level. I know people like Craig Hickman in the Maine legislature have been pushing for more fruits and vegetables in the schools and more homegrown, Maine-grown products from our own agricultural interests. So good ideas, and thank you for your insights. I'm amazed at your observations. I guess they probably agree with mine anecdotally, but to hear it from a professional dealing with it in the emergency room is pretty astounding.
All right. Well, Emery, thanks so much for calling in. We're going to go to a tweet, and I suspect this is going to be our last one. We're going to go to Marfine. He says, I know you love poetry. Me too. How will you and Commissioner Macon prioritize the arts in Maine schools, which helps with critical thinking, something important in today's world of information overload and fake news?
Wow. Thank you, Marfine. Great question. You know, I'd like to see a comeback in the arts in the schools. Too often the arts and music have taken a back seat to the programs that are more aligned with what we've called learning results and the things that kids are tested on at different levels of schooling. And that's unfortunate. I fully support the arts and music in the schools. Not sure what I can do as governor, but I would, you know, support you to weigh in at your local school board, school committee, to make sure that they don't set aside the arts and music and that kind of education. I feel strongly that literature and poetry are an important part of everybody's lives and should be, because, you know, it helps us to see how other people live. It helps us to see how others think and to feel what's out there in ways that we can't do in the ordinary course of business in a day.
All right. Well, Marfine, thank you. And indeed, that's our last question. Governor Mills, thank you so much for joining us today. We look forward to having you back on the program.
Thank you, Jennifer. You know, I think people, I've said this often, I'll say it again, in my administration, in my office, you will find an open door, an open mind, and an open heart.
Don't forget, coming up next, Governor Mills' budget address. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. We had additional help from Mal Leary and John Bradford. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.